Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. You'll find a line open for you right now. And Zorba, along with our callers, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, the science of making food taste good to us, manufactured food.
Okay.
Information about the science of making food and whether or not they really should be doing this to us. Are we the culprit or are we the ones who are simply showing off what we really want?
Got it.
And then we're going to talk about that medical first, the baby with HIV who we think is actually cured.
That would be a first.
Unbelievable, important information. That really is a watershed moment.
And a guest chef recipe.
That's right. Tiramisu pancakes. I happen to love tiramisu, and this is a wonderful recipe that is a pancake. Mm-hmm.
And it's a vegan recipe.
That is right. That is right.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. To the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I just have a question for Dr. Zorba. Every winter, my hands get really dry, and this winter just seems to be excessively worse than all the other ones.
Now, you sound like a young person. How old are you?
I am 27.
Yeah, I think of that, the symptoms you describe as being something that happens as we get older.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's not 13 anymore. You know, so
yeah,
she's 27.
She's also not 76.
Well, I mean, you know, old age is relative to you. You know, old age is 25 years older than you are today. And youngins, yeah. A youngin would be 25 years younger.
Isn't that usually something that happens
no,
as we age?
No. Everyone, dry skin. In the wintertime, it's like a desert. As we get older, our skin does get drier.
Uh-huh.
It's our skin.
Uh-huh.
It's an aha moment. But still, people. So I've got to ask a little bit about your habits. Do you wash dishes?
I do. I do a lot of dishes, do a lot of cooking, so I'm washing my hands quite a bit.
Wash your hands quite a bit. But specifically now in dishes, to zero in on that, do you use gloves when you wash dishes?
I don't.
I highly recommend that as number one.
I've got another recommendation. Yeah. Don't you have somebody else that could wash the dishes?
I do. He helps once in a while.
I love that. That's Tom's recommendation. You're right. That's even better than gloves. Get out of the dishwashing. I love it. I love it. But being that you might not change that behavior as much as you want to, dishwashing detergent is very drying to the skin. So the first thing I would do is I would get some rubber gloves that you buy. They're rubber. They're actually made out of – I'm sure they're not made out of rubber these days. Get extra large or large so that it's very easy to put on and take off. Mm-hmm. And don't wash your dishes without gloves. That will immediately make things better, and that's because the detergent that's in dishwashing is very, very drying. And if you're making stuff all the time, you're washing dishes. My hands are dry. I have gloves all over the place, and I put on gloves. Once you get used to it, it's actually better because you can really make the water super hot and get rid of the grease on that dish. Very, very – that's number one.
Has anything changed in your life?
The only difference this winter is that I'm pregnant, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Oh, you're pregnant. When's your baby? Yeah. Your baby is due in how many months?
I'm due in about 10 weeks.
Oh, how wonderful is that? Yeah. Well, pregnancy does change the skin. There's no doubt about it. And a lot of pregnant women complain about dryness and dry skin and situations such as that. So that's in there. But now, so getting back to what to do about it. Okay, so number one, you want to avoid detergents. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got dry skin all over your body, instead of showering every day, as Americans do, you shower every other day or twice a week. Not in the shower that long, not having the water super hot, that makes a difference. When you wash your hands, the soap you use, critically important. Things such as Dove soap or Basis or Aveeno, A-V-E-E-N-O products. They're non-drying soaps. Stay away from Dial, Lifebuoy, Zest, Irish Spring. Those are drying soaps. Moisturizing cream, the Aveeno products are great. There are wonderful creams that are good. And there is a cream called Lacitrin, A-L-A-C-Hydrin. Hytrin. I think it's H-Y-T-R-I-N or H-Y-D-R-I-N. Mm-hmm. And Lac Hytrin can make a big difference to keep the moisture within the skin. Also, there are a number of other moisturizing creams that you can have. And if you go to the pharmacy, you talk to the pharmacist or the pharmacy assistant, they'll show you different creams and try them. And the final thing, if this does not work, is sometimes a topical steroid cream that's mild, prescription strength, 2.5% hydrocortisone cream can make a difference. All these really matter. Now, I've got another question. What baby number is this?
Number one.
Baby number one.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful is that? Well, you must be really, really excited.
Yeah, we are, definitely.
Yeah, that is great. I highly recommend that we follow Tom's advice right now and you start training your hubby to wash those dishes. You say, hey, baby,
yes.
I'm birthing the baby. It's time for you to take over the dishwashing.
You can tell him Zorba Pastor says.
There it is. It's my prescription for you. So congratulations and good luck on your delivery.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, listener with us in Morristown, Tennessee. Hello.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I've got a question about an area of health that I've never had any previous information on, and it has to do with copper toxicity.
Copper toxicity. So why are you concerned about copper toxicity? Are you drinking out of copper?
Well, it has to do with my children by way of my ex-wife.
By way of your ex-wife.
Correct.
Well, that's always a loaded question, isn't it?
Not that I'm bringing any baggage to this, exploration.
Okay, just asking.
What else is she doing wrong?
Good. I've been waiting to talk about this for quite some time.
So she's concerned about copper toxicity coming from – I mean, copper toxicity really comes from drinking out of vessels that have copper in them or using them. I mean, that's the most common thing. What is she concerned about?
Well, she had a series of health problems last year.
Okay.
Her health deteriorated quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been seen a
– naturopath?
Yes, she had an acupuncturist and also was also doing Western medicine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Western medicine said it was her thyroid, and so had some work done on that. But but she's been doing a dual approach, and on this dual approach, the Eastern folk are saying that this is the result of her copper levels. And they took a big chunk of her hair out and did a test on it and said, you've got high copper levels, and that's what has caused you to have thyroid problems.
Well, first of all, I don't think copper and thyroid problems are linked together, certainly not from the Western model. I mean, the reason why I mention naturopaths is they often give a diagnosis of some sort of heavy metal toxicity, copper toxicity, aluminum toxicity, and other things. She can find out, by the way, whether or not she has too much copper in her bloodstream by just going to a Western doc and saying, I want to have a copper level done. And you can find out at an appropriate Western lab, and I'm a Western doc, so that's why I say appropriate, whether or not she really has copper toxicity. If that's the case, then you have to say, where am I getting the copper from? You know, is it from my, I mean, we don't generally use cooking vessels that have copper in them. And so I would question that diagnosis. Of course, your kids are okay. They're not having any problems, I assume, or are they?
Well, they're not showing any signs of anything, but now that she feels like it came from her water. And so now there's this, they have been vegetarians. One silver lining in all this is that evidently a vegetarian diet has a lot of things like beans and rice, and who knew how many things had copper in it. But there's all this list of things that the kids aren't supposed to eat now, and that's where it kind of
I get concerned about that, and I get concerned about limiting foods, especially for children. So I would have to look at the diet. You know, a lot of naturopaths, I'm not against naturopathy, but they'll look at it and they'll say, we get copper from this, copper from that, and you get heavy metal from this, and they put children, you know, adults who want to go on a wacky diet, well, that's their choice because, you know, it's, sure, it's an adult thing. But for children, I think it's something completely different. I think you've got to, you know, if your wife is concerned about copper and copper toxicity and she really is concerned, get your kids tested. Say, look, let's see whether or not they have it. You know, obviously, you've got a relationship with your wife and you both raise your children. That's what I assume. And before they, yep, go on a diet that is really, you know, starts to limit their protein and calcium and other things, you've got to find out whether or not they really have something, because otherwise, you might, sorry, be doing harm to your kids.
Very good. Well, that's, here's another thing, is like getting rid of it. And mm-hmm, evidently, you can get rid of it through heat therapy. And so she now, oh, has a sauna in the house, and she, uh-huh, puts the kids in there for periods of time.
Mm-hmm. Heat therapy. So did she buy the heat therapy from the naturopath? No, that's,
I don't know that he has it in his trunk. Uh-huh. I think he made the recommendation.
Uh-huh. But that, I don't know if any of that stuff stands the test of science. That's what I'm saying. I cannot imagine that sweating it out in a sauna. I mean, kids can be in saunas, but sweating it out in a sauna is actually going to get rid of copper in your bloodstream. That doesn't make any sense to me.
He is selling her some vitamins and, ah, such, and some kind of compounds, ah, that she can. Uh-huh. She and the, uh-huh, kids are supposed to be taking. Uh-huh.
And how much? And how much a month are the vitamins that he's selling her?
I have not.
Well, you may or may not want to ask that, but that's often where naturopaths make their money. They make their money not in advice, but they make their money on the vitamins and minerals that they sell. Mm-hmm. So in other words, and they're often, it's not unusual for them to be $20 or $30 a month. You know, you add yourself and a couple of kids in it, and before you know it, you're spending $100 to $200 a month, and you're spending $2,400 to $3,000 a year. That's a lot of money on stuff that may not be really doing anything at all. So I would say, okay, where's the science? Where do you, uh-huh, have it? You know, a lot of times they'll say, well, a scientific, yeah, study show this. Okay, show me the science. And one study doesn't really mean that it works.
Okay, so I don't have to worry about so much keeping up to the strict.
I don't think you have to worry about it, but you do have to work through the rocky shoals of you and your ex-wife and how that works out. That's, of course, you know, obviously a co-parenting issue.
Why do you think I called you?
Well, thanks so much for doing that.
She might be calling next week.
There we go. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye. Before we take our next call, Zorba, you have some info on addictive junk food. What's in it that makes us want it?
Right. So, first of all, full disclosure, I like Michael Pollan. I mean, that's full disclosure. I don't own any – I own his books, but I don't have any pecuniary interest in it. But I like Michael Pollan. He's got a concept which is sort of easy to understand. If it has more than 5 ingredients, it must not be good for you. Now, I don't really believe that because I make a lot of dishes with more than 5 ingredients. But his concept is, if you're looking on the back of a Twinkie that we know is the ideal junk food, right?
Yeah.
If you look at junk,
yeah,
food, I think it has 42 or 45 ingredients in it. And obviously, it's manufactured to our taste. And there was recently a New York Times article that looked at food manufacturers, what they give us and how they change our taste. So first of all, it's a chicken and egg thing. They're giving us what we want, right?
Sure.
But then we want more of it. So if we look at sugar,
yeah,
sugar seems to be hardwired into the brain, totally hardwired. Every society that has ever been studied on Earth likes sugar and likes to have sweet things. So there's something about sweet things that must have been evolutionarily important, yeah, to us, you know, probably to give us more energy and so on. So when we look at manufactured food that they're making for us, they tend to be sweet, oil, and salty. And more things are like that. And right now, one of the problems with obesity in our society are these manufactured foods that, yeah, are easy and convenient to get.
So sweet oil.
Sweet, salty, and oil.
Yeah.
In other words, that's what they tend to have. Now, recently I came back from Nepal. I was there for a month. I was off the grid. We brought our own food. The first thing I noticed when I came back, were, when I ate anything, was the fact that there was a lot of sugar and stuff that I never expected it to have. I mean, there were – because I eat manufactured food like most people in the country. Mm-hmm. And I automatically, for about 2 weeks, tasted things as saltier, sweeter, and oilier, greasier. Is what they were. And then it disappeared after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, no. Is this a bad thing necessarily?
Well, I think it's a bad thing because we have obesity. We have obesity, we have hypertension, and we have heart disease. And those are main issues in our society. And a lot of that is because of manufactured food. So I think there's been a play now on manufacturers to begin to cut down, for instance, on salt. And that's what Campbell's has begun to do over a slow period of time. In other words, they put it in because it's sold. Now they're taking it off. It's what Heinz is doing with ketchup. And I think it's very important with what we have to demand as consumers and say, hey, we want to have food that is less sweet, less salty, and less oily, and then these manufacturers will begin to do it. I think it's a really big issue that has just begun to be talked about within society.
Got it. Let's get back to the phones at 800-462-7413. And we welcome now Zorba, a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I had a question for Zorba about psoriasis. I have, in the last winter here, I've gotten a bunch of new spots, and they keep telling me to apply this cream, but it's not working. I just get more spots.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had psoriasis?
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years. Now, what sort of creams you've had? Creams, have you had light treatment for that? Tell me a little bit about what you've had in the past.
Well, they prescribe me what they call like a steroid cream. Mm-hmm. I have like a lighter cream they give me for like my eyelids and my eye area and my ears. I have it in my ear canals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a stronger, thicker cream that I have for like my elbows, my knees, and my ankle and whatever else. Spots everywhere, so it's hard to label them all off.
And the creams really have lately have not been doing their job, but they've done them before?
Well, they didn't really do a great job. They would just make my skin really like greasy, and then like whatever skin I had there would just come off, and then I'd have like this reddish layer, but that reddish layer would be like so itchy still.
So itchy and so problematic. Now, you're going to a dermatologist for this?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Same dermatologist all the time or a different dermatologist?
Same dermatologist.
Uh-huh. You know, psoriasis is it's a chronic disease which has to be treated, you know, in a variety of different ways. There are a whole number of different creams that can be put on. Steroid creams work, but they only work for a period of time. And then if we use stronger and stronger steroid creams, the problem is you can get skin atrophy. In other words, the skin then becomes very thin, what we call atrophic, can bleed and can then cause its own problems. Then we have some very old-fashioned remedies that are tar. They're called coal tar. They're actually from coal, and there are some old-fashioned remedies. Then there are a variety of what I would call new remedies, which include light boxes and medications that you take orally. You're obviously, with your psoriasis, it's not working. What has your dermatologist, what has your doc said when you've told them?
He's just been like, well, keep up with the cream. It should help. And I don't know. Every time I tell him it's not helping, then he's like, well, are you sure you're using the cream the way I said? And I'm like, yeah, you know, like he always tells me, you know, don't use it like all the time. Mm-hmm. Use it for a few days and then take a few days off of the cream because he doesn't want the skin problem to become really thin, like you said.
The atrophy. How much time does it give you when you're in the office?
I probably am in there for maybe 15, 20 minutes.
So he gives you, he or she gives you a good amount of time when you're sitting there. I think you ought to get a second opinion. That's what I would recommend. I think you should get a second opinion. Psoriasis, sometimes you just get a different dermatologist, looks at it in a different way, has some other recommendations. Clearly, this is not working for you, and the question is, what can you do to get it under control? And there are some whole body treatments that you can get. They have their own side effects, but they can be really quite remarkable in reducing the need for the creams. And the creams that are used, steroid creams on the whole, as you said, they can have side effects, and so we can only use them for a certain period of time. But I think a second opinion is very, very warranted in a case such as yours. So good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. We appreciate the call. And before we take a short break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from Agnes in Madison, Wisconsin, who needs some advice about how to stay active. She writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I am in awe of your vast medical knowledge and of Tom's persistent distaste of tofu." "It's okay, Tom," she says. "I'm not a fan of tofurkey."
Neither am I.
"As a fan of the show, I'm hoping you can provide me with some info on improving knees with osteoarthritis. I'm a middle-aged runner and Zumba enthusiast. You know what that is?
You Zumba. Well, you it's not the Harlem dance or the Harlem trot. I know that much. You move around, and it's energetic, and it's fun.
She continues, I anticipate that my knees may experience some degeneration in the menisci. They are already making crackling noises. Any insights you can provide would be wonderful.
Well, first of all, osteoarthritis is a chronic degenerative disease of the joints for which we have absolutely no cure. You know, the treatment is broad-based. Anti-inflammatories help reduce the inflammation. Acetaminophen, which is Tylenol for pain. Sometimes a topical rub with an anti-inflammatory diclofenac cream called Voltaren. We could spend the whole afternoon on osteoarthritis. And, of course, there's glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. So my recommendation is keep moving. You may have to give up running because it may be a young person's sport. Zumba may be exactly what you need to have. You've got to make sure it's low-impact sports for you.
Yeah, but keep on doing it.
100%.
Yeah. Are you in need of some sage advice? Just send your questions along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a guest chef recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls. Our medical myth buster, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. Give a call and you'll find an open line right now. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time. And for this recipe, we are happy to welcome guest chef Chloe Coscarelli. Chloe, hi.
How are you?
Fine. Good to have you with us. You're author of Chloe's Desserts, and this is really interesting. You are the first vegan chef to be the winner of a Food Network challenge.
That's right. I won a challenge called Cupcake Wars on the Food Network with all vegan cupcakes. And so my new book, Chloe's Vegan Desserts, I reveal all my secret cupcake recipes and other vegan dessert recipes.
Excellent. When you think vegan, you don't tend to think desserts very often. So this is really going to be interesting, I think.
Right. We're doing everything with no dairy, no eggs, and so no butter, no cream, all of those traditional ingredients we're not using, but I use really healthy alternatives to make the desserts just as delicious.
Yeah, you know, Tom is right. When I think of dessert, I think of dairy. Of course, I live in Wisconsin, so I think of dairy in the morning, dairy in the afternoon, dairy in the evening. Tell me, why did you embrace veganism? What motivated you?
Well, I've always loved animals, and when I started dipping my toes into vegan cooking, I just realized that you could eat so much more and still feel light and energized afterwards. So I much prefer eating vegan desserts because it doesn't make you feel heavy afterwards and you're not eating any saturated animal fats, still getting delicious flavors. So I find it's a great way to indulge.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. Vegetarianism has sort of become more important within the country over the last two decades. And then vegan, which is sort of almost a new term. You know, if you look at it 10 years ago, no one really, vegan was rarely mentioned in food, and now vegan is commonly mentioned, vegan desserts, vegan restaurants, much more common. But as Tom said, we don't associate desserts with vegan. When I think of vegan, I basically think of sort of main courses and side dishes, but I don't think of sweet. Which is wrong, because this is a really very wonderful cookbook.
Well, let's do it.
Wonderful cookbook. Okay, so tiramisu pancakes. But tiramisu traditionally has cheese. It has mascarpone cheese, because I make tiramisu at home, and it traditionally has eggs. I mean, those are the traditional things. How do you get the taste without mascarpone cheese?
So instead of using eggs in the pancakes, I actually use baking powder. And if you add the right proportion of baking powder to your pancakes, it makes them extremely light and fluffy, and it makes them rise. So my pancakes are really thick, no wimpy flapjacks over here. And the secret ingredient is just a little bit of baking powder, which everyone has on hand. So I don't like to use any strange, weird ingredients that you have to, you know, go to a unique grocery store to find. I like to use everyday ingredients. And then instead of using the cheese that's normally in the creamy part of the tiramisu, I actually top these pancakes with a little bit of coconut whipped cream. So you just buy a can of coconut milk from the Asian aisle of your average grocery store, and you make whipped cream out of that. So these pancakes are infused with espresso and a little bit of rum and some dark chocolate chips, because dark chocolate is vegan, and then top it with the coconut whipped cream, and you've got all those flavors of tiramisu, but in the form of pancakes, which
is my favorite food. That sounds great. And I use, I happen to use coconut milk, but I use it in curries. So I don't associate it with something sweet, but it's very interesting. I'm going to make this. Okay, let's start with the recipe. We start with 1 cup of flour. 1 cup of flour, all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoonful of baking powder, and that is a lot of baking powder. You're right. That is a significant amount of baking powder.
It is.
Which
you won't taste it. It bakes off.
It just bakes off and makes a big difference. Tablespoonful of instant espresso powder.
Any sort of powdered form of that coffee flavor will work for this ingredient.
Right. And I recently read an article in Consumer Reports looking at instant coffee and how it's actually improved over the years. So these powders are much better. 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 3/4 cup of water, 1/4 cup of pure maple syrup. In other words, the real stuff.
These pancakes are so loaded with flavor. It's like flavor overload when you bite in that you really don't need the milk.
Sounds good. I like flavor overload. 1 tablespoonful of dark rum, which is going to give a nice little flavor to it, which I'm sure you can leave off, but I think most people would put it in. 1/3 cup of semi-sweet chocolate chips, and as you said, the darker it is, you just have to make sure that they're dairy-free.
Yeah, a lot of mainstream chocolate chip brands in regular grocery stores actually sell vegan chocolate chips. So, for example, Ghirardelli, Guittard, all of their semi-sweet chocolate chips have no dairy in them. So those are great. Just check the label when you're purchasing and just make sure you don't see any milk ingredients.
Excellent. Excellent idea. Canola oil for greasing, powdered sugar for serving, and we'll talk about the coconut whipped cream, which is optional. So let's make it. In a large bowl, whisk together the flour, baking powder, espresso powder, and salt. Then in a separate bowl, whisk together the water, maple syrup, and dark rum. Then add the liquid to the flour mixture and whisk together once again until just combined, just like you make any kind of a pancake. You want it to be lumpy. Do not overmix. It should have lumps. Very important. And then after that, gently fold in the chocolate chips. And then lightly oil a large nonstick skillet or griddle. Heat it over medium heat. Make sure you heat it up enough before you pour in the pancakes, because that's a critical issue. I usually leave mine on for 4 to 5 minutes, and I put the timer on the stove to make sure I'm actually not leaving it on for 30 seconds to make sure it's there. Then pour 1/4 cup batter into the skillet. When the bubbles appear in the center, time to flip it. Cook on the other side until lightly browned, 1 more minute, and repeat with the remaining batter. Becomes a little bit too thick, you just add a little bit of water, and then 1 teaspoon at a time. And then dust the pancakes with powdered sugar and top with a dollop of coconut whipped cream. Question about the coconut whipped cream. So you take the coconut cream or coconut milk out of the can. Is it coconut cream or coconut milk you get at the Asian grocery store?
I buy a can of coconut milk, and I like to use Thai Kitchen brand, which is the main brand that you'll see in most grocery stores. And then I chill the can of coconut milk so that the cream separates on the top from the coconut liquid, the water on the bottom. Then when I open up the can after it's chilled for maybe 30 minutes, you can just use a spoon and scrape off the solidified part from the top. Use that, and you can discard the water or save it for another use.
And then you make it just like you make whipped cream.
I whip it, and I add a little bit of powdered sugar, which gives it a little bit of more body.
Right, and actually, in whipped cream, when I make it, I add a bit of sugar. Sounds wonderful.
Boy,
this
sure
is a great recipe. I love tiramisu. I am sure that our listeners are going to want to make this recipe. I think it's great. I think Chloe's Vegan's Dessert, it's a wonderful cookbook, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye. To get a copy of today's recipe or find out more about Chloe Coscarelli's latest book, Chloe's Vegan Desserts, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, on our website, you can see photos of Tom and me. Wow, that's a wow. You can download other great recipes. That's another wow. You can get our weekly podcast. And don't forget, you can find us on, guess what, Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. To the phones again now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Lafayette, Indiana now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, this is Dorothy, and I have a question about possible hip surgery. I'm having hip pains and hip problems, and I've done lots of things for it, and it just seems to be progressively getting worse. So I actually spoke with an orthopedic person, and he recommended I see a surgeon. And I'm thinking, my gosh, before they cut the bone in my leg, I'm going to have some awful, awful pain or something before I let them do that. So I'm wondering if there are any alternatives that I haven't tried, if there's a simpler way. Should I exercise it a lot? Or?
Well, the issues with osteoarthritis of the hip, let's talk about that broadly. As we get older, we get arthritis. Everybody gets arthritis. Ants get arthritis. Dinosaurs had arthritis. Can you imagine how uncomfortable it was for the T-Rex when he was running down the fields and he had arthritis too? So what do we do for arthritis overall? There's nothing that stops the degeneration. Some people it's quick, some people it's slow. Anti-inflammatories do not alter the course. Ibuprofen helps with the pain and the inflammation, doesn't alter the course. Exercise, very important to keep yourself as supple as possible. And then enter in orthopedic surgery. The real question is, when do you do it? The x-ray does not determine when you do it. What determines when you do it is your level of pain and level of function. That's what determines it. And then you look at it and you say, am I doing the activities that I want to be able to do, or am I not? I ski on a ski hill. I want to be able to ski as long as I can. Those kind of things. So that's the function point of view. So now let's look at the pain point of view. How much does it bother you?
Morning and night, it bothers me a lot. But if I keep it moving, I'm pretty good.
Got you.
But when I get up, or if I'm teaching, when I get up from my chair at school, I have to hang onto the desk in order before I can put enough weight on it.
So you're at what I consider to be a borderline. You're at a borderline. Sounds to me like you're going to need a hip replacement.
It sounds to me, too. There is something that they've done in that's called a minimal invasive or mini incision hip replacement.
Well, there are a variety of different ways that you can have. There's hip resurfacing for younger people, and there's the total hip replacement. And that's where basically you interview two or three orthopods, look at different kinds of surgery, and make a decision. And once again, I say two or three because you sound like a public radio listener who wants a second opinion. So I would go to two or three, and then I would choose the surgery that they thought would be best for me. Let me know what happens.
All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good luck with it. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And to the phones again, Zorba, a listener with us in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Dr. Zorba. I have a question about ultrasounds. My wife is pregnant, and I was just wondering how necessary are ultrasounds, and does everybody need to get one?
Well, everyone does not need to get an ultrasound. They've become easy, cheap, inexpensive, done in the office, and so we kind of overdo them. Now, if there's something wrong with the looking at the baby and looking at the physically how your wife develops, ultrasounds are definitely worthwhile. How often are you getting ultrasounds with your baby?
Well, we haven't had any yet, but our doctor is pushing us towards one, and she understands our position on it, but she would rather have one than not. I guess she had a mother not have one, and then there were some complications. And so now she kind of wants everybody to have one or two or three kind of thing.
Well, I think there are a couple of issues. First of all, they're good for dating. That's what they are. We know, I think there's enough data on ultrasounds to say that they're safe for babies. I think you can also say we want to have the minimum amount of intervention that we have to have because we don't want to have a lot of intervention with having a baby. And if you're not happy with that particular doc, there are other docs in most areas of the country who will be less invasive, who are good physicians who can deliver a baby and use less technology. And I'm really on the side of less technology because frankly, technology, although it's been useful for childbirth, has a dark side to it also.
Yeah, that's kind of how we feel as well.
Yeah. Sit down with your doc. Make sure this is the right person. You know, you'll know. You get a gut feeling when you're sitting with either your family doctor who's delivering babies. A lot of family docs do that in Wisconsin. Or the OBGYN. You're going to get a gut feeling for what it is because basically you want a minimal use of technology at the time that the baby is actually being born in pregnancy. You want to use the right use, the smart use, the savvy use, but not the overuse.
Right, right. And she's a good doctor. I just think she has a few hesitations about not doing
it. Well, discuss it. That's how you come up with a good answer. And
right.
Good luck on this baby.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call. Well, Zorba, before we take a quick break, you should get back in your booth to offer up another round of 4-cent advice. Today's customer is Scott in Appleton, Wisconsin, who may need you to speak up a bit. I'll let him explain. He writes, "Dear Zorba, thank you for your show. I love the advice and comic relief. A week ago, I woke up and could not hear out of my left ear. I took Mucinex and NyQuil, but nothing helped. My ENT ran some tests and said he was sorry for my condition, but that I would probably never get my hearing back. He gave me a nasal steroid and sent me on my way. I suffer from TMJ, which probably causes some pressure, but could this really be it? I am an audiophile, and music is a huge part of my life. I don't know how I could live without it. Is this really a condition without a cure?"
Well, first of all, we don't have enough data to know what's going on. An ENT looked in the air, said something, that said, you're not going to get your hearing back. The question is, what happened? Was it a problem with the cochlear? Was it a problem with the nerve? Are there three little bones in the ear that actually amplify sound? Was that the issue? Something to do with the bones? I don't think we have enough information here. But certainly, I'll tell you, if I went to an ENT doc and they said, I'm sorry, you're not going to get your hearing back, you know what the first thing I would do is?
See another doc.
I'd go see another ENT
yeah,
doc.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would do. So my recommendation, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is you need a second opinion. And the other thing about a second opinion is, if there's a question about a second opinion, I love university centers or large medical groups that are 50 to 100 miles away and don't necessarily know the first doc, because I'm going to get a better second opinion.
And
so that's part of what's going on.
And when you do, you want to know exactly what's going on.
What's going on? What's happening? And did
you don't want to get a steroid and say, see you later.
Not at all. And do you need an MRI of the brain to see what's going on? Do you need a CAT scan or an MRI to see what's going on in the inner ear and the middle ear? It's clear he needs a second opinion and needs more information to find out what's happening.
Mm-hmm. If you had a diagnosis you need double checked, get in line for some of Zorba's inexpensive insight. Just send your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research to talk about. That's coming up. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster as well. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before we take our next call, this was really, really, really big news. Apparently, a cure with an HIV.
For a baby.
Baby.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very important. So, first of all, we don't cure HIV. what we do is we keep it under control.
Yeah.
Stop the drugs where you give them. Viruses pop back up. Stop the drugs if you have HIV, and eventually you die. You die from HIV. So all we do is keep it under control at the present time. One person was cured years ago. He was called the Berlin patient. His name was Timothy Brown. He was cured because he had a bone marrow transplant, among other things. And they still don't know exactly what was going on. So let's talk about this baby and what actually occurred.
Yeah.
The mom didn't know she had HIV, and she was a high-risk mom. She didn't know at all. She didn't have any prenatal testing of any significance because you test for HIV. And when the baby was born, the baby had – the mom found out. They found out the mom had HIV, and they started the baby on drugs. Now, normally they start on what's called prophylaxis, two drugs, and this particular pediatrician started on three drugs because there was lots of virus in this baby's blood already. Mm. Now, we have dropped HIV in children tremendously since we started prophylaxis, but this particular doctor used a different concoction, a different cocktail of this. Baby was treated, remained on the drugs until the child was 18 months old, and these are drugs child has to take for life. And then the mom disappeared. She didn't bring the baby in anymore.
So wasn't taking drugs anymore.
Not a good mom. Come on. Yeah, the mom never got tested beforehand. We don't know much about the mom, but the mom stopped bringing the baby in and putting the baby on drugs. The doctor didn't stop. And lo and behold, then the baby shows up later. I can't remember exactly how many months later. And they're going to put the baby back on drugs, but first they test, and there's no virus. And the first thing the doc did, the pediatrician said, was, this is a lab error. I'm going to send the blood back, obviously. There must be virus. No virus. Test it again. No virus. Test it again. No virus.
So
there is no virus present in this
baby. Can we call it a cure?
Well, they call it a functional cure because they don't know over time if the virus is going to appear. But this is different from all the other AIDS patients they looked at. Yeah. And the reason why this has hope is it may be that we're using the wrong – I don't want to say the wrong cocktails, but maybe a different series of cocktail and drugs may actually cure this, not only in children, but in adults.
I was going to ask, what can we learn from this?
Well,
we can learn a lot, apparently.
Absolutely. It turns out that this particular concoction, taken early on, cured the virus functionally so we don't see it anymore. And it may be very, very helpful for post-prophylaxis, for instance, for people who are having sex with others who have HIV. That's still an important issue worldwide. But more importantly, this may turn out to be the possibility, a hint of a cure for those who have HIV/AIDS.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And our next caller is a listener in Juarez, Mexico. Hi.
Hey, hello.
How can we help?
Okay, I was calling because I heard that certain foods trigger asthma attacks. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what to avoid.
Uh-huh. What kind of – tell me a bit about your asthma. What are you on for your asthma?
Basically, I'm talking on behalf of my mom.
Uh-huh.
She's 62.
62. She's got – she's had asthma for a long time?
For about 30 years.
Is she on inhalers on a regular basis? She takes them every day or just when she needs to?
No, every day.
Basically. Every day.
Inhalers and nebulizer.
Does she smoke?
No, she never did.
She never did smoke. Okay, so that's really good, by the way, for asthma. Okay, so she takes a nebulizer, she takes inhalers.
Yeah.
So the first thing we do with asthma is we look at the variety of drugs that are on the market for asthma. Very important. We have drugs that are called rescue drugs. Drugs such as Proventil. These are drugs that rescue you if you're suddenly wheezing.
Uh-huh.
Then we have steroid drugs that we use. Then we have long-acting beta agonists combined with the steroid drug. The most common is Advair. And then we have drugs that sort of reduce the mucus. They're drugs such as Spiriva. And so the first thing with asthma is to make sure, A, she's on the right drugs. Now, let's go to food. For many people, there's certain foods that will tend to trigger asthma. They're non-foods such as air pollution that, of course, will trigger it. If you're in a wood-burning stove, if you're nearby anything with smoke, that will, of course, trigger asthma. But the way to figure out if any foods are triggering her asthma is to take a food, stop that food, and see whether or not her asthma is better. There's not a lot of research that shows there's no testing that can be done. We don't have a blood test. We don't have a patch test to see what it is. But for some people, they notice that certain foods bother them. And the foods that tend to bother them are things such as chocolate. For some people, chocolate tends to bother them. For other people, it can be hot, spicy foods that bother them. And it might be the pepper that's actually in the air. when you actually smell the food, that may be it. I can't tell sitting here which ones bother her, but she may find that there's certain triggers. Has she looked at food at all to see if it's one of the things that bothers her?
I believe it's basically like dairy products, like milk and stuff like that.
Well, there are a lot of people in the world, worldwide, who have something called lactose intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And lactose intolerance is where you don't digest dairy products. Northern Europeans do a great job of digesting dairy products. And as you move from the Northern Europeans to the South, dairy products, after you're about a year or 2 years of age, are not used very much because they are a problem. So for your mom, for instance, if she wants to have, let's say, cheese, or she wants to have dairy products, you may look at something such as Lactaid. And Lactaid is an enzyme that helps her digest. But if she's noticed dairy products are the case, I think getting rid of dairy products is probably the first thing to look at. And then, of course, includes cheese and ice cream.
Yeah, of course.
And that doesn't make for a joyful life sometimes, but it may be. But I would eliminate it completely and see what happens to her asthma. That's the way. You wipe it out completely, wait a few weeks to a month, then you reintroduce dairy products again, see what happens. You stop it again. In other words, start, stop, start, stop. Do it twice before you really decide if that's the case.
Yeah, well, thank you then.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks so much for listening. And Zorba, time again now for our medical myth buster. Over the last couple of years, I've been hearing about the power of pickle juice to help with muscle cramps. Some athletes even drink the stuff while exercising. So, Zorba, I'll put my pickle puns aside and ask, is it worth it? Can a sip of pickle juice really stop the pain?
You know, I have heard that over and over again. Pickle juice and kraut juice. Have you ever had kraut juice?
No, and I've never had pickle juice. I don't like kraut and I don't like pickles.
Oh, you don't like pickles?
No.
Oh, I love pickles and I happen to love kraut also. Pickle juice and kraut juice happens to be loaded with salt, as you can imagine, because sauerkraut is loaded with salt and so are pickles. And for some people, it helps them after they exercise a lot because they've sweat a lot. They're replenishing the sodium. So that may be the basis of the idea that pickle juice is good to drink afterwards. We have to remember that on the whole, in America, we get way too much salt to begin with. So if you're going to have pickle juice or its sister kraut juice, make sure you cut down with the salt somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Have a mystifying medical myth. Don't let it stew in its own juices. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Westminster, Colorado. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
My question has to do with if a person has had a significant weight loss, and I'm talking like 30, 40 pounds in several months in their lifetime. And then years later, or what somebody told me was that you're going to have to watch it now because your body's going to protect itself and you won't be able to take off weight. I'm wondering if this is true.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about yourself here?
I am, yes.
Huh. And how long has it been since you lost the first 30?
It was probably 14 years ago.
It's always hard to lose weight.
Yes.
And as we get older, it's harder because we have less muscle mass. And if you look at how our eating habits have changed over time, we're eating more food than we used to.
So it doesn't have anything
not
to
that
do
your
with
body,
the first
not at all, not at all. It's not that it's harder because you've lost it already and you're not going to lose it again because your body is in a different spot. It's that your body is in a different spot. We lose 1% of our muscle mass roughly every year. So I weigh about the same that I did when I graduated college.
So,
but when I look in the mirror, I do not look the same as I did when I graduated college. I've got these,
So when I get to be 100, I'll have no muscle mass?
No, it's 1% of what's left.
Oh, okay.
But but what happens is you have less muscle mass now than you had, even if you're the same weight.
Yeah.
It's not that you're less strong because you're doing less. It's you actually have less muscle mass.
Yeah.
And so what happens is from a point of view of burning energy, you're not burning as much because you've got less muscle mass. The next thing is over time, we've had calorie creep. We're eating 250 to 300 more calories than we did 20 years ago. And so when it comes to eating less food, we have gotten into the habit of eating more food. And I'll tell you when it struck me. It struck me a few years ago. My wife and I were in Italy. And we went to a nice little restaurant, little hole in the wall, what I would call, I don't know where that phrase came from, a hole in the wall restaurant, small restaurant. And we had pasta in three, it was called pasta in three courses. And a dish came out, and there were three different kinds of pasta. There were three little dollops, what I would call dollops of pasta. Okay, wonderful, wonderful dish. Several years later, I was in Buffalo, and I had the equivalent of pasta in three courses. And in Buffalo, they had three complete plates of pasta. There was a plate of spaghetti. There was a plate of ravioli, and there was a plate of lasagna. So in Italy, I had one plate divided by three, and in Buffalo, I had three plates. And then I looked around the restaurant in Buffalo. They're all obese. You look around the restaurant in Italy. They're all the right weight. So, no, if you lost it before, you can do it again. It's just tough.
Got to work at it.
Yeah. It's just tough. Not an easy thing to do. So,
I could still do it if I worked hard.
Yes, you can.
It's harder when you get older.
Yes, you can. It is tough.
Thank you so much.
Sure, you're welcome. We appreciate the call. Thank you. 1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And before we head out, Zorba, let's take a listener tip from Rob in Bozeman, Montana. He heard your advice about buying an extra thermometer to check your oven's real temperature, but has a more social solution. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I enjoy the show very much, but just because an analog thermometer gives a different reading than the oven's built-in thermostat doesn't mean it's right. It could be out of whack, too. For comparing recipe temperatures, I recommend a home calibration technique. Bring your thermometer to the oven actually used by the recipe's original author, Mom, Grandma, Aunt Gladys, Uncle Pete, etc. And have the cook, Aunt Gladys or whoever, set the oven to the temperature called for in the recipe. Then take its temperature."
I love it. I love it. That's a great idea. Wonderful idea for a family recipe. I don't know how you do it for a recipe, for instance, from Mark Bittman in the New York Times said, "Hey, head over to New York and put your thermometer in Mark's oven," and I would follow just what it says.
But the cookies still always taste better when Mom makes them.
Of course. Always.
Figured out the recipe for success? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
And don't forget, that's at ZorbaPastor.org. And, of course, we're on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. This show was produced by Gabrielle Padriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0323Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.